I'm Paul Wiegraf, director of the Delaware Division of the Arts, and your host for today. In the studio with me is the executive director of the Biggs Museum of American Art, Charlie Guerin. Welcome, Charlie.
Hi, Paul. How are you? Nice to be here.
Great. It's great to have you here. You're relatively new to the Biggs Museum. When did you arrive?
I arrived the 1st of May, so it's just about 8 months. May.
Okay, about 8 months. For our listeners, because this is your first time, I believe, on the show, right?
Yes, yes.
Could you give us a little bit of background about you? What you came from and what brings you here?
Well, I'm an artist by training. I'm a painter and a printmaker, and did my work at University of Illinois and Northern Illinois University. And that sort of led circuitously into the museum field. I first worked in this field as an exhibition designer. And that was in Colorado Springs a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And that led to a job as a curator, and that led to a job as a director. And I've been the director of several museums, most of which have been in large university art museums. And then most recently before this, I was at the Hyde Collection in upstate New York. So it's been a kind of circuitous adventure from the west back out to the east. And it's been great to be here.
Now, with such a varied career in arts administration, have you been able to keep up with the art side
of actually your life? I actually have. I maintain a painting and printmaking studio. I've been making prints for 30 years and doing paintings for as long, and have had an active exhibition schedule over the years and an active presence in the market. So I've had a number of galleries, mostly in the West, because I lived in the West most mm-hmm. of my career.
Given that you lived in the West most of your career, what attracted you to Delaware in general and the Biggs Museum in particular?
Well, it was kind of interesting. I have, as I said, I've been in the West. Most recently, I was in Tucson, where I was there for 12 years at the University of Arizona Museum of Art. And at that period of time, my son was going to school, and he was accepted at Johns Hopkins University 6 years ago. And at that point, we bought a house in Baltimore, and we started spending our summers in Baltimore to get away from the blistering heat of Tucson in the summer. And we kind of re-fell in love with the East Coast. And so 3 years ago, my wife and I decided that, you know, maybe it was time to leave the desert before it completely dried out. and so we started looking east, and we found this wonderful museum in upstate New York called the Hyde Collection, which is a wonderful museum, very much like the Biggs in that it's was founded by a family. Mr. and Mrs. Hyde, who collected European painting, Rembrandt, Vermeer, you know, the usual suspects of 18th, 19th, and 20th century art. And we loved it there. It was terrific. We were right at the base of the Adirondacks, and it was beautiful and wintry. And and then out of nowhere, the Biggs called me through a headhunter that they were using and wanted to know if I knew anybody that would be interested in the position at the Biggs. And at the time, I said, you know, I really don't know anyone that would be interested in that particular job. And about 2 weeks later, they called me back and said, well, would you be interested in the job? And I said, no, I wouldn't be interested, because I'd only been in New York for 2 years. And I'm used to being in places for a long time.
Right.
The shortest I've ever been at any one position was 10 years. So I felt that I, you know, had a lot yet to do at the Hyde Collection. But finally, they insisted, and I thought, well, I should just go down and be courteous and go look at the Biggs. And I did that, and mm-hmm. I found it to be a remarkable museum mm-hmm. at a wonderful point in its history, a time where it was really ready to launch to a new level. And for the most part, most of my career in the museum world has been to do that, to take institutions to a new level. And so I saw that as the potential at the Biggs. And so they basically offered me a job that I couldn't refuse. Hmm. And I was delighted to accept the position and to move down here. So here we are in Delaware. And I love Delaware. I think Delaware is absolutely charming and a wonderful place.
So So does that mean we can count on you being at the Bigs for the next nine years and four months?
I think so. I'm not moving is, you know, moving is a pain in the neck. Yeah. And so I'm not anxious to do that again anytime soon. And I've really fallen in love with Dover. I live in Dover. I love it. I live out on the west, in the west side of Dover in the country, in the Amish country, and it's very charming and picturesque, we have wonderful neighbors, and it's delightful to actually live in Dover and to be close to the museum.
Now, having been in several different venues, what similarities do you see between the Bigs and some of the other places you've worked, and what differences do you see?
Well, I think the similarities are in that it has a really excellent collection. Every museum where I've ever worked has really had very fine collections. And that's the basis for any of those activities. I mean, what is the point of a museum if you don't have something to muse with and to make available to the public? And so Sewell Biggs, I think, was a remarkable collector. He had a great eye. He was very persistent. He had a mission in his own mind of collecting the arts and fine crafts of the Delaware Valley and the peninsula. And he had the resources to do it well. And so he had a good eye, and he could afford to buy good things. And so he did that. So the foundation of the Biggs Museum is really quite an extraordinary collection. It's equally on par with any other museum in Delaware.
Mm-hmm. Now, as a collection, much of it is Sewell Biggs collection, as you mentioned. Does the Biggs continue to collect?
We do. In fact, in the 25 or almost 25 year history of the Biggs has more than doubled the collection from Sewell Biggs's original holdings. He was a very smart guy. When he created the museum, he left an endowment for not only for the operation of the museum, a partial endowment, but also a collections endowment, so that the directors and curators of the museum over the years would have the funds necessary to continue to collect. And so the museum, through its various professional staff over the year, have done an exceptional job of adding to that collection. And it has continued to grow and to be a really very fine collection.
Could you speak to the range? Because I know Sewell Biggs was, I understand he was largely focused on the decorative arts, but I know your collection is much broader.
Yes, it is. It is. He loved American furniture. Mm-hmm. I would say, in many ways, the furniture collection was one of his true passionate interests. But he also collected Delaware silver, and we have, I think, a very unique collection of the silversmiths from the 18th and 19th century in Delaware. But Sewell also collected painting, American painting. He knew what he was looking for. He had good advice from other museum curators around the Mid-Atlantic. So he bought many of the great artists of the 18th and 19th century. We have American Impressionism, we have Hudson River School, and we have the great examples, Thomas Cole and others of that period. And so he had the resources and the eye to select very good paintings. And so the painting collection is exceptional, I think. What he didn't collect, oddly, is he didn't collect works on paper. And so so the museum does not have great holdings in American drawing or American, we have some American watercolors, but mostly oil on canvas.
Mm. Interesting. Now, I know not too long ago, it was before you were here, or maybe it was wrapping up when you came, there's a wonderful installation that is both outdoors and indoors at the front entrance. Could you speak to that? It's just an intriguing piece that just sort of draws your eye right into the museum.
Well, there was an effort about 3 years ago to add the first floor of the building to the Biggs. Until that time, the Biggs was housed in the second two floors of the current building, and the first floor housed the information center for the state. They moved to a new facility. We took over the first floor. We had a capital campaign and renovated the first floor of the building so that the entire building is the Biggs Museum. And to sort of commemorate the success of that, we commissioned a wonderful piece of sculpture. It's called a loft. It's a beautiful piece that that is a tree that shows sort of the classic blackbird flocks that we have here in the summer and the fall that are rising off of the tree, and they fly literally towards the building and then through the glass into the building and up through the three-story atrium. So it's a wonderful piece of contemporary sculpture.
Mm-hmm. Now, the Biggs Museum is part of the First State Heritage Park. Is mm-hmm. that correct? Which I believe they describe themselves as a park without borders. Can you talk about the Biggs' role in that park?
That's kind of interesting because there's actually three entities. There's the First State Heritage Park. There's the First State National Park, mm-hmm. the first national park and the only national park in Delaware, and then the Biggs Museum. And so it's really an affiliation of three separate entities. And they are our collaborators. The national park is relatively new. We commemorated it last year in May. And I think to really know what that will ultimately be. At this point in time, there are national park markers on the green. The green is part of that national park. The old state house is part of that. And we are on the edge of that. So we actually serve as a contact point for many of the day-to-day visitors who come to the park and who are interested in knowing what's in the area. And so we direct them, obviously, to our own facility, but also to the State House and to the other entities within the Heritage Park, which is a state-operated park entity, and our partners are there. So it's the three of us are sort of working together to really decide what the park can be, both in the short term and the long term. And I think part of that is waiting to see how the National Park Service will evolve in its support of that effort and what kinds of direction it takes. It has new staff, obviously, because it's a new national park. And so we're working with them to kind of hone what the park will be, because it is a statewide park. It mm-hmm. has mm-hmm. aspects in Dover. It has aspects in Newcastle and all over the state. Mm-hmm. So it's different than some national parks, which are just in one place. Yellowstone right. is Yellowstone, and yeah. you go there. Well, we're all over the state, mm-hmm. many different sites around mm-hmm. the state. And so the nature of that is evolving.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to get into some of the Biggs Museum's programming, but first remind our listeners that you are tuned into News Radio 1450 WILM and 1410 WDOV. Our guest in the studio today is Charlie Guerin, the Executive Director of the Biggs Museum of American Art in Dover. Charlie, let's talk a little bit about your programming. As a museum with a collection, how do you what factors go into bringing that collection to life to the visitors who come right. in?
Well, we do lots of different things. The permanent collection is one that is relatively static in that because there's a lot of furniture in that collection, we don't move things around whimsically. But we do try to incorporate that collection with other aspects of what we do. We work with your division and your selection of master artists in the state, and when we do that exhibition of those artists, we try to integrate their work into the historic part of the collection itself. So we may have an 18th century sideboard next to a piece of contemporary furniture, and we try to find similarities between what the artists today are thinking about in relationship to what artists of previous times were doing. So we do that in terms of trying to reinterpret the permanent collection. We also show lots of changing exhibitions in the museum. The first floor of the museum is basically changing exhibition space, and then we have three galleries on the third floor that we use primarily as exhibition space for changing exhibitions. And so we're trying to do a variety of things. Right now we're doing something very unusual. We're showing an exhibition called Illuminating the Word, the St. John's Bible. Now, the St. John's Bible is the first handwritten Bible, like an illuminated manuscript of the 14th and 15th century. It's the first one that's been done since the invention of printing. And so this was commissioned by St. John's University in Minnesota to be a commemoration of the millennium, the change of the millennium. And it took 15 years and 26 artists and a lot of time and a lot of money to actually rewrite the St. James Bible by hand on large sheets of vellum, which will ultimately be bound. But right now it is not bound. And so we have 71 pages of the St. John's Bible in the galleries today. And it includes the writing and the wonderful illustrations. There are 1,300 pages in the Bible, and there are 60 illustrations in the Bible. And it's a terrific work of contemporary art.
Mm-hmm. Where was that done? You mentioned was it Minnesota?
It was actually presented to St. John's Abbey as a project by a gentleman who was the scribe for the Queen of England. And he proposed this project with the notion that somebody should do something really special to commemorate the millennium, and that he felt that since he had been thinking about this for many years, that maybe St. John's University would jump at this opportunity. Well, it took him 3 years to jump, but they did, and so it was his brainchild. And so he collected a group of 23 artists to actually do the illustrations and to write the script for the Bible.
So was this a combination of both visual artists as well as calligraphers?
It was actually of three groups: visual artists, okay, who did the illustrations, right, calligraphers who did the writing, and then a group of monks at St. John's Abbey who were sort of the theological consultants on it. So everything was done by committee. The artists would sit down with the theologians and they would decide, okay, what chapter or what passage in the Bible shall we illustrate? Shall we illustrate the creation, or shall we illustrate the apocalypse? And they would decide, and then they would talk about how they would illustrate that in a very contemporary way. For example, we know that Adam and Eve were not Anglo-Saxon people; that they were Africans. And so, in this particular Bible, the depiction of Adam and Eve is as African people, because we know that that's where humanity began, in that continent. And so there are many references to what we know today in the 21st century that they didn't really know or understand in the 5th or 6th or 7th century. And so it's very much a contemporary Bible. When Donald Jackson perceived of this project, he perceived that it should be a very, very contemporary 21st century version of the Bible.
Now, were theologians involved in determining which translation to use? Is it more modern, or do they use the traditional King James
version? It's the King James version, but it is the version that is most often used by the widest range of Christian faiths. And it has many references in the Bible and to the Jewish community, to the Muslim community. It's a very inclusive Bible.
Interesting. Now, how long will that be on exhibit?
That's up until the 27th of March, so you'll have a wonderful opportunity to see it. I think it's of great interest to people of faith, but it is also of great interest to artists, because it is a monumental work of contemporary art. The level of detail in the drawings are truly phenomenal. I'm an artist. I look at art every day, and I look at some of these illustrations, and I cannot fathom how they were actually done.
Yeah.
They're so luminous and so in-depth. They're actually written on vellum, which is calfskin, and so they have this sort of wonderful luminescence about them that is unique and very different than the way watercolor and gouache and gold leaf look on paper. Looks very different on vellum. It's a very exciting piece of work.
It sounds like a really exciting exhibit and a great example of how you present both your permanent collection as well as visiting pieces of
exactly.
artwork.
We do that because, you know, every museums need to change. We want people to come and then to come again and to come again. And so by doing changing exhibitions, we get people to come often and also to experience the permanent collection in different settings and so forth. So it's a really a way to engage people on an ongoing level.
Mm-hmm. We only have a couple minutes left, but I would like you to touch on the educational programming that you do, because I know the Biggs is a very important resource for our young people today.
Well, interestingly, we have just hired a new educator on the staff. Her name is Regina Lynch. And Regina is from Wilmington originally, and she comes to us from California most recently. Regina's job will be to help to formalize our education program. We have had longstanding programs for children, but we've never had a permanent full-time or close to full-time educator on staff. And so we have done that, and her job is to develop a really vital docent program so that we can tour children on a daily basis in a much larger way than we have, and hopefully to develop some really innovative programs that we perceive will serve our community in very different ways. Museums are changing, and the way we change is to really look at our community and say, okay, what can we do as an art museum to make our community stronger, to support the educational efforts by our colleges and our schools in the community to make it better.
So in the 30 seconds or so that we have left, what would you say are the Biggs Museum's greatest assets to serve the community, both of Dover and Delaware as a whole?
I think the greatest assets are the people that are involved in it. The staff are extraordinary. It's a small staff, but they're extremely bright and capable. And we have a very wonderful board that is truly dedicated and works to make that institution work. We have a wonderful gala every year that they help to produce that helps raise money for us. Like every museum, we're out there doing that every day. Mm-hmm. But it's a terrific group of people that have pulled themselves together to make this a wonderful museum.
And to learn more about the museum, your website is?
It's thebiggs.com, so just go.
Biggs.com. Charlie, thanks so much for joining us today. Charlie Guerin from the Biggs Museum of American Art. It's really been great to hear from you about your background, your contribution to the Biggs, and what the Biggs is doing to serve Delaware.
Thank you.